So the 17-year cicadas may be leaving behind their smelly corpses like so much trash as they complete their life cycle, but there are some people who regard whole categories of animals as trash. Dave Johnson is an instructional designer at the Institute for Learning and Teaching at Colorado State University, and he helped edit a book called Trash Animals, Nature's Filthy, Feral, Invasive, and Unwanted Species. He says he became fascinated with these creatures after he started catching one of America's least desired fish.
I was interested in trash animals because I had been clerking in a fly shop, and fly fishing is all about trout. And I went out to fly fish for white bass, and so I hooked probably about a 15-pound carp, which was much bigger than any white bass that I'd ever caught. Wherever I moved, I would always look for places that potentially had carp. And the reactions that I got from other anglers, they were either very angry that carp were even in those waters, or they dismissed it outright as some kind of lunatic activity.
On catching carp, did you keep them and eat them?
I did once. So one day I caught a nice-sized carp, about 22 pounds, just north of Fort Collins here. And my daughter was with me, and she said, "Dad, can we take this fish home and eat it?" And I said, "Well, at this point, I sort of feel obligated." And so I have a book that explains step-by-step how to clean them. And I worked on one side of the carp, and it took me 45 minutes, which is a lot longer than it takes to prepare any other kind of fish. And so I then flipped the carp over because I was impatient and filleted it just like I would any other fish. And we went inside and we cooked the one side that we had prepared properly, and it was fine. It almost tasted like catfish. And we prepared the other side, and it stank up the house for 3 days.
Oh, my.
So I almost thought about throwing the pan away. And that's an interesting thing about the history of carp introduction. Just within about 10 or 15 years, people had decided that it was a big mistake because of the flavor of the fish.
Trash is a powerful word in our language. As a verb, it means to be, you know, violent. And then also, we use it as a pejorative to refer to people. I mean, there's trailer trash, white trash.
A trash animal has everything to do with the way that humans value other species. So the first mention of a trash animal in print comes from a document, and it was introduced to Parliament in 1749. It was called The Wealth of Great Britain in the Ocean. And one of their assessors noted that the Dutch had three kinds of marked herring. Two were valuable, and the last was called trash. And so the way that people have been valuing animals, whether that has to do with economics, whether it has to do with aesthetics, whether they just think they're pretty or desirable, for anglers, whether or not they fight or whether they jump, we tend to make these categories for animals, and one category is a trash animal.
Now, of course, in nature, there's no such thing as trash. It's just a resource that's being used by whatever is going to use it next. But us humans, we have this concept of trash.
And it's largely cultural. My co-editor and I, we use this term as we say in the book, as a tool for analysis. It's a way to really think about the way that we treat animals. Because if we do have so-called trash animals, then we are not only assigning them value, but we're also thinking about ways that we're going to act toward those animals. We're thinking about ways that policy might be enforced.
So let's talk a bit about the different animals that made it into your book. Everything from gulls to wolves to prairie dogs and pigeons, of course. For example, how did the Canada goose become a trash animal?
This is a really interesting story. And Bernie Ketchenbach's essay in the book, I think, is one of my favorite. I mean, it tells the story of a time in the early 20th century when migratory Canada geese had almost become extinct, probably due to habitat loss. Because we were draining wetlands at the time, and then probably also due to hunting. So there was a massive public relations campaign where any farmer, basically anybody, could go and get Canada geese, and they could raise them in their backyards and then release them into the wild. And this was going to save the population. But what happened through this process is that these people who were raising geese and releasing them were actually changing their behavior.
So this is a native species here in the United States, the Canada goose. And because people successfully kept it from the brink of extinction, we consider it trash.
Yes, because there are too many. I've even heard of Canada geese referred to as sky carp. So we still have migratory Canada geese, but we have to distinguish between those geese and the geese that visit our golf courses and our city parks, the ones that never really go anywhere. If they do migrate, it's across town.
Let's talk about coyotes and prairie dogs. I mean, those are native to North America, and yet they're in your trash animal anthology as well. Why is that?
The way that humans have changed the landscape has either been detrimental for prairie dogs or it has helped the coyote. In regards to prairie dogs, there's a lot of mythology. I grew up in rural Texas and part of a ranching family. And even though we don't have prairie dogs in Texas, I'd always heard that prairie dog holes were dangerous because horses and cattle could break their legs in them. Although when I asked my uncle, who drives all over the West hauling cattle, if he had ever seen this happen, he had to admit to me that no, he hadn't. He'd just heard the stories. So in that respect, there's a story about prairie dogs competing with humans. In that case, it's, you know, the raising of livestock or the keeping of horses. Coyotes, because we eradicated wolves, we helped increase their range and their numbers all across the United States. It's easy to kill animals that, to us, have no value. Even those that I knew when I was growing up who would go out and kill as many coyotes as they could, they still had respect for other species. And so the way that humans value animals determines into large degree how we treat them. And it seems like an obvious statement, but the contradictions are also kind of interesting. Because on one hand, we don't feel bad at all about killing a whole bunch of coyotes. But on the other hand, if someone were to shoot my mother's cattle, everyone would be angry about this.
As a kid growing up, you probably shot a lot of coyotes. How do you feel about that now?
I feel awfully guilty about it. So at the time that we were calling up coyotes with a collar and shooting them, we were thinking that we were protecting our cattle. When in reality, we weren't helping ourselves out at all, because a female coyote can triple her litter sizes within a generation or two if the pack is threatened. So by killing a few coyotes, we were only making this perceived problem worse.
You know, I suppose from the perspective of the animals, with 7 billion people, there are too many people. Maybe we're trash.
A lot of the qualities of the animals that we call trash have a lot of the qualities that humans have. Humans invade new spaces. We tend to change the landscape. We make the landscape suit us, and that often crowds out other species. We outcompete them. If those species compete with us for resources, we either use what we call management campaigns or we eradicate them.
What risk does humanity take on for itself by considering certain other species as trash, stuff to be gotten rid of violently if necessary?
There is a human perspective involved here that sort of determines your values about some species. So while an urban environmentalist, probably white, probably middle class, thinks that reintroducing wolves to Yellowstone and seeing them thrive is a really good idea, there is a rancher out there who leases property next to Yellowstone who is thinking, this is a threat to my cattle and my way of life. It's a threat to me personally.
What do you hope people will take away from this book?
I really hope that they'll question their own values about animals. Again, the thing about trash animals is that it comes back to this idea that humans are placing value on species. And one of the things that we wanted to get at in the collection was to have people really think about this. You know, where did these values come from? And sometimes knowing a little bit of the history of the animal, how it got here or where it came from or whether it's native or invasive, knowing something about the animal's biology, you can start to develop an appreciation for the animal, start to see it in a new way. And we thought maybe if people can do that, they can question these values, they can question the whole idea of having a trash animal in the first place.
David Johnson's a instructional designer at the Institute for Learning and Teaching at Colorado State University and co-editor of the book Trash Animals. Thanks so much for taking this time today, Dave.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure to be here.